This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. Russian President Vladimir Putin is in the country this week to address the General Assembly at the United Nations. He's also meeting with President Bush this weekend in a summit about international cooperation in the war on terrorism. The two countries have been joined in a united front against terrorism since September 11th, but the relationship has been strained by the Kremlin's policies in Chechnya. President Putin has announced that the war is over in Chechnya and has cast the continued Russian military involvement in the republic as a fight against militant Islamic terrorism. Ann Neva is a Moscow-based freelance journalist who frequently reports from Chechnya. To cover the conflict there, reporters must get a permit from the Kremlin and travel in the company of Russian soldiers. But Neva sneaks in, avoiding a Russian checkpoint, for her stories. She just spent 3 weeks there in July.
I must say that the Kremlin has been helped a great deal by the after 9/11 context in the world, the so-called war on terror, because the Russian President Putin was the first one to give a call to Mr. Bush, the President of the United States, right after 9/11, and he, since then, he's been trumpeting. I mean, he's been very proud of the fact that he says he's the first one, in fact, to have started the war against terrorism, and that this war in Chechnya is part of it, and that's why this is justified. That's why this is a justified war. And the West and the rest of the world, Europe and the United States, cannot really go against that. Because who is able to go to Chechnya and check it out? It's impossible to work in Chechnya as a journalist. If you're a journalist, you're supposed to be completely controlled by the Russian army, who shows you only what they want to show you. I'm one of the very few who never accepted that.
Now, the Chechen separatists who took 700 people hostage in a Moscow theater last fall, mm-hmm. They claimed, or they framed their struggle as part of the Islamic Jihad.
No, the first thing they said is that they were doing that because they wanted independence for Chechnya. That's what they said before being killed by the Russian special forces. There is absolutely no correlation, no link, even proved by the Russians or by somebody else, between the so-called Islamic terrorists in Chechnya and some terroristic groups outside of Chechnya.
How do you understand this war, then? Is this a colonial war?
That's right. That's exactly what I think it is. It's a colonial war. And my impression is that Russia has been in search for its identity in the last 12 years, I mean, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. I think it's very difficult for us in the West to understand the consequences of the collapse of the Soviet Union. And I think one of the consequences for the Russians is that they feel unsafe, unsecure. They don't understand who they are anymore. They are not Soviets anymore. They're supposed to be Russians, but what does it mean to be Russian? And so one of the answers to all those questions is the war in Chechnya, because it's easier to have an enemy, to fight against a designed enemy, than not to have one. And I think, unfortunately, as long as Russia hasn't solved its problem, the problem with itself, we will have this war in Chechnya. So it's unfortunately a long-term conflict.
So what do Chechens on the street, whom you talk to, say about the current phase of this war?
Chechens have lost their hope. They are not stupid people. They get the news from the outside world. They understood that nobody will come and help them, that this war is completely forgotten. And what can they do with knowing that? Nothing. Nothing. So they just continue. They are living. It's just miserable lives. Miserable lives within Russia. And the problem is that this is going to backfire one day on Russia itself. And that's the main reason, I think, for which Russian government, the Russian administration, should try to find a solution for this war, because my impression is, unfortunately, that they are not even trying to find a solution. What they are offering is a farce. It's not helping. And the majority of the people I've talked to are just obsessed with one thing, which is the Russian army's withdrawal from the territory of Chechnya.
How do you get to that point, though? The Russian military won't even enter into negotiations.
The Russian military won't even accept this idea. This is, for them, out of question. So that's why this war is... It's very depressing because on the one hand you have the Russians who don't want to lose face. In fact, that's now a question of honor, and they are doing their best to pretend to the population of Russia and also for the outside world that they have found a solution for Chechnya, and the elections due to happen on October 5th. And the referendum that happened earlier this year are actually the instruments of this illusion. They have understood, Russia, the Kremlin has understood that in order to please the West, they should at least pretend they use the democratic tools. And what is better than a referendum or an election? But the problem is there is no state in Chechnya today. How can people go and vote? And, well, I'm not even talking about the farce of the organization of the election. There is almost only one candidate, and the result is already known. But the very idea of going voting, it's just a pure nonsense.
I want to ask you about the infrastructure right now. What's the status of just electricity and water and roads mm-hmm. and schools?
There is no electricity in Chechnya. It's very hard to live without electricity. I mean, there might be some places like Grozny Center, the capital of Chechnya, where you have some electricity sometimes. It's not all day long. There is no water. The water is being brought to the population, and they have to buy the water, which is quite expensive, actually, for the people living there. And the first war was started in 94 until 96. So in fact, it has been like more than 10 years that Chechnya has been without any kind of normal, I cannot even say modern, infrastructure.
Have you talked to children in your travels? I'm thinking many of them have only known war.
I've talked to many children and teenagers, and I've held babies in my hands, in my arms. And I've been wondering how is that possible that during the peak of the war there were so many women pregnant. Of course, the children of Chechnya, they have known only war. In the last 10 years, there's been only war and horror and absence of law and order in their country, and that means that there is an entire new generation of men who really hate the Russians, and that's brand new, because the people who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, of course, they have been used to live with the Russians. They all have actually good memories of their common past, I mean the Soviet past. Now it's completely over. So this new generation, which is not grown up yet, I wonder how they will, you know, how they will cope with their life when they will be in their 20s, in their 25 to 30s. If there is still a war going on, that means there will be more and more fighters.
Do you see active recruitment from the rebel forces among youth?
In fact, they don't even have to recruit. The youngest guys, they come to them naturally and say, "Well, please, would you take me with you?" That's what a chief commander told me recently in August. They are having no problem with recruitment. And actually, it's a new phase, because that was not the case at the beginning in 1999-2000. The guys, the rebels who were fighting at the beginning of this second campaign were, for most of them, those ones who had fought against Russia during the first campaign in 1994-96. And in fact, a lot of them didn't really want to fight because they were tired with the war and etc. So there was a moment in 2000-2001 when they almost didn't have enough fighters. Now, with the war not stopping, of course, it's making easier for recruitment.
A whole new generation.
Yes.
I'm speaking with Ann Niva. She's a freelance journalist based in Moscow, and she's been covering Chechnya since 1996. She's also the author of a memoir about her experiences reporting from Chechnya. It's called Chien de Guerre. Let's take a short break now, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is journalist Ann Niva. She's covered the war in Chechnya since 1996, often disguising herself as a Chechen woman in order to get around the ban Russian authorities have placed on most Western journalists. Now, what's it like moving around the country? Reportedly, there are checkpoints everywhere. There is still just an adamant Russian military presence wherever you look.
Yes, there are checkpoints everywhere. Actually, it's very difficult to move around. And I've been sneaking into Chechnya since 1999. But it's getting more and more difficult because, each block post, each checkpoint is a risk. Is a risk for my life, obviously, because they can at any time they can ask me for my ID, and if they find out that I'm a foreigner and a journalist, they will arrest me. And actually, they already did arrest me in year 2000. But the other reason for which it's getting even more dangerous now is that I am a woman. And in fact, 2 years ago, that was helping me. The fact that I am a woman helped me a great deal in covering this war, because the soldiers wouldn't check women. They wouldn't really pay attention to, you know, what a woman is doing. And now it has changed with the new wave of terrorist acts in Moscow and other places, with the female suicide bombers. So now they're paying much more attention to women. And my last trip to Chechnya, which was late July, was quite intense, to say the least. And so if that's difficult for me to move around, you can imagine how it is for locals. Locals almost don't move around anymore because they are scared to death that anything could happen at those checkpoints.
In Chechnya, just in the past year, there have been kidnappings of, or one very well-publicized kidnapping of a humanitarian aid worker. There have been suicide bombings. Traveling now in the country, what are you most afraid of?
What I'm most afraid of is not being able to file my stories, to report the way I want. I'm not afraid by the I mean, of course I'm afraid by danger, and being under the bombs was a very unique experience that changed my view on life forever. But now I did it, and I will continue cover this war, because if I don't do it, who's going to do it? But I must say that the I'm not afraid of being kidnapped, and I've never been afraid of being kidnapped.
Why not?
Because I make everything not to be visible. And people who are kidnapped are very visible people. For example, they are working for international NGOs, for the Red Cross, or for Médecins Sans Frontières, Without Borders, or whatever international organizations. Or they are journalists, like very visible people. My strategy is just the opposite, is to remain very, very discreet. I never publicize the fact that I'm a journalist. I never hide it, neither. I never hide it. I always, people who talk to me, they all know that I am a journalist. But I'm taking a lot of precautions.
What do you mean by precautions? Like what?
Well, I never stay at the same place more than a night, for example. I'm constantly on the move. I am trying not to get caught. That's basically the idea. If I get called by the Russians, that's it. I won't be able to do my job anymore. In fact, they arrested me already one time. That was in 2000, in February 2000. The secret services arrested me, but after having found me by chance. In fact, they weren't even looking for me. They just found me by chance because at the time they were doing a search in a house where I was staying in. But that was a big thing because my newspaper back in France, they were really scared that I had disappeared because I couldn't use my satellite phone and contact them anymore. So it was almost like a huge scandal between Russia and France. But then they released me after 3 days of questioning.
And you were deported, no?
Back to Moscow. Yes, of course they didn't want me to continue what I was doing in Chechnya.
So is that what would happen now if you were caught by Russian authorities?
No, I think what would happen now would be more serious. I think they would deport me from Russia, and I live in Russia, and I don't want to be deported from Russia.
When you're questioned by Russian authorities or Russian soldiers, do you reveal your identity? What do you reveal?
Well, the only time I was questioned by the Russian authorities, those people were secret service officers. And of course I had given him I have nothing to hide. I think that I am walking there completely legally. That's my opinion. That's my point of view. And I want to make that clear to them. I have a Russian accreditation, so I'm entitled to work as a journalist, as a foreign correspondent on the territory of Russia without exception. And Chechnya, so far, is still part of the Russian Federation. So they say, the Russians themselves claim that Chechnya is part of the Russian Federation. So, well, now, of course, in order for making things more complicated, the Kremlin has issued separate cards for Chechnya. And I got this card after they arrested me. I decided to go with them for one time. I did the organized trip for one time because I wanted to show to my readers the difference in coverage, the difference when I am in an organized group and with when I am by myself. That was quite an experience, actually. So I went with them one time, and since I've been with them, I decided to continue my own way.
Because you saw only what they let you see.
Of course, this is exactly what happened. And of course I prefer to go by myself because I'm free to report, to do whatever I want, to go wherever I want. This is a completely different way of covering the war, of course.
I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anne Neva is a freelance journalist based in Moscow. She's the author of a memoir about her experiences in Chechnya, Chien de Guerre,